Hello everyone, this is a podcast, a digital ethics or topics in cyber ethics podcast, depending on which course you are doing. And this podcast, I'm going to look at the first meta-ethical theory that we are going to study, which is utilitarianism. So in this particular podcast, I'm following the PowerPoint slides, which are titled DE01 Meta-Ethical Theories 1, which are on our Moodle site. And if you open up that PowerPoint presentation, you'll see in the agenda there is a topic called consequentialism, which is what I'm going to discuss and explain. The historical perspective of utilitarianism, and then the concept of what is good. So one of the most primary concepts in studying ethics is the consideration of what is considered good, because we obviously want to pursue, have a good life. If you remember from last week, part of the lecture was what do we need to do to have a good life that's acceptable. So we're going to explore that concept a little bit today as well. And then I will stop at that point and we'll finish the podcast, and then I'll have a couple of other follow-up podcasts which will come up after that, which will deal with the rest of the topics in this week's PowerPoint presentation and for this week's lecture on utilitarianism. So the term, I tend to use the term utilitarianism and consequentialism kind of interchangeably. Now, I don't want you to get too worried about these big words with ism on the end. Essentially, utilitarianism is just derived from the word utility, which I'll explain in a few moments. And utility is the idea of what are the things in society that create utility, which means that we can pursue a good life. And the term consequentialism is really about considering the morality of our certain actions and determining those by their likely consequences. So if you think about making a decision, an ethical decision about something, or a moral decision, or any kind of decision actually, and usually a decision that you make has certain consequences, right? So consequentialism is really just the focus on what are the consequences, what will be the likely consequences of this moral decision that I'm going to make. So the morality of a particular action under consequentialism or utilitarianism depends upon the likely consequences of the action compared to other alternatives, to alternative decisions that you might make. So that's a real key point with utilitarianism. With this ethical theory, we're thinking about what are the alternatives that we can choose? What kinds of decisions could we make? So sometimes when we're making an ethical decision, we are faced with several different alternatives, choices that we could make. And we have to think about what could be the potential consequences of each of those decisions. So that is really one of the key kind of points that underlines what consequentialism or utilitarianism is about. So there is quite a few different versions of consequentialist ethical theories. And if you look that up, if you Google search it, or if you look up the Stanford Encyclopedia on Philosophy, you will find that there are quite a few different approaches to consequentialist theory. But one of the most famous ones is utilitarianism, which is what we're going to look at today. So even though I'm using these terms a little bit interchangeably, utilitarianism does have a fairly specific focus. And it was really the ethical theory that was first dreamt up and written about by a philosopher called Jeremy Bentham. Well, actually, Jeremy Bentham was sort of a philosopher, an economist, and a political scientist or a political theorist. So one of the important things to note with ethical theories is that they all tend to conflict to some extent with each other, and we'll kind of learn about that as we go along in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But I'll try and make a few, once we start getting into finding out what utilitarianism actually is, you will discover that it potentially can come in conflict with other different types of ethical theories. So the term utility came up it was first described by a Scottish philosopher called David Hume in the 1700s. So if you are up, if you have the PowerPoint slides open, this is PowerPoint slide number 4 that I'm looking at the moment. And so, and as I said earlier, the term utility really refers to socially beneficial consequences, right? So if you think of public utilities, this term is still used these days. Public utility is the government agency that provides water to all our houses. That's a public utility. Energy companies, so electricity companies, are considered to be public utilities because they produce socially beneficial consequences, right? So Jeremy Bentham ran with this idea in the later 1700s and 1800s, and he developed this into kind of an ethical theory. So he said, what we should do is promote overall happiness and reduce pain or harm. So we want to promote overall happiness, which is obviously a socially beneficial consequence of our decisions, right? So that's how he came up with the idea of utilitarianism. So the interesting thing about utilitarianism is that when it came to light as a moral philosophical theory, many of the ways that we acted or the norms that we followed at that particular time, or that people that lived around the sort of 1700s and 1800s, were based very much in religious teachings of the time. So the religious teachings of the time laid down certain actions as being morally good, and certain other actions as being immoral or not right, right? And this was the case regardless of the consequences, right? So many religious kind of approaches to ethical theory at the time were very kind of duty based, and it didn't matter what the consequences were. So sometimes the consequences didn't produce happiness for the person following them, but people had certain moral duties to behave in a certain way. So, for example, it was considered extremely immoral to get divorced. And this was particularly, of course, problematic for women at the time. A divorced woman was seen as very, very immoral, right? So you can see here that the consequences of the action, maybe the woman was in an abusive relationship, she might want to get out of that because of the consequences of staying. But based on sort of the moral theory of the time, she had a duty to stay within that relationship, right? So in some senses, this kind of points to a form of indoctrination, right? Which we'll get back to that a little bit later. So the proposition that we should decide the entire moral worth of our actions by comparing their consequences with those of other actions or other decisions was considered pretty revolutionary at the time. So I mentioned earlier that we were going to explore this concept of what is considered a good. And it was John Stuart Mill in the 1800s and in the mid-1800s who was a fan of Jeremy Bentham and utilitarianism. And just reading a quote from John Stuart Mill, who was also a political scientist and an ethicist and a philosopher, and he said this. So this is a quote. The creed which accepts as the foundation of morals utility, or the greatest happiness principle, holds that actions are right in proportion as they tend to promote happiness, and wrong as they tend to produce the reverse of happiness, unhappiness or pain, for example. So that was the kind of classical view of what a good was. So according to John Stuart Mill, a good, something that's good, that promotes a good life, which is the goal of an ethical life, is something which maximizes pleasure or happiness. And this definition really is kind of the broadly conceived is the classical or orthodox view of utilitarianism. So utilitarianism, in short, really is just making decisions based on their consequences with the hope that they're going to maximize the overall pleasure or happiness. Not of the individual. Bear that in mind. Keep that in mind. We're not talking about individual pleasure or happiness. We're talking about overall societal happiness or pleasure for the majority of people, right? So that's important to understand. So this raises an interesting problem, because the classical view of utilitarianism then focuses on our subjective experiences, right? So what are, you know, what are considered to be the things that might make us happy, make humans happy or provide pleasure? These are subjective experiences, which means that they can be different for different people, right? So you might wonder, how is it possible that we could assess people's subjective experiences of pleasure or pain and then come up with some kind of measure that's going to measure the overall happiness of everyone, right? And one of the problems with utilitarianism is that, which some ethicists have argued, that if we cannot come up with some kind of standard by which we can measure the overall pleasure and the overall pains from our actions, then it would seem impossible to apply utilitarianism to determine the morality of our actions, right? So this is in slide number 7. So I want you to just read about that and have a think of it and try and get your head around what that means, because it's quite important to the theory, right? So one other kind of problem or potential problem for utilitarianism, given that pleasure and happiness is a subjective experience, is that it gives rise to this approach to utilitarianism called pluralism, right? So pluralism is derived from the word plural, which means many. So the plural of dog is dogs, many dogs, right? For example. So pluralism means that there are all sorts of different things that might produce pleasure or happiness for people in society. And they tend to differ from groups to group, right? So we might consider friendship, we might consider knowledge or a good education, or we might consider everyone living in a nice house with a nice car. These are things that give us pleasure and happiness, right? And so the problem with the pluralist approach to utilitarianism is that it gives rise to this idea that there's all sorts of things that we consider to be good, that give us pleasure and happiness, right? So pluralists think that when considering the consequences of our actions, right, consequentialism, the consequences of our actions, we should really be considering all of the things that we might consider to be good. So this gives rise to this problem called preference satisfaction. And actually there are some utilitarianists, such as Peter Singer, who we will look at a little bit later on, who actually considers himself a preference satisfaction utilitarianism. So the idea of preference satisfaction is that we want to satisfy whatever our preferences are that give us pleasure and happiness, right? So we might consider things like beauty, knowledge, education, privacy, maybe freedom. These are all the sorts of different things, and everyone has different preferences about which ones they consider to be more important, right? And so now we have this problem within utilitarianism that seems to make the measurement of what is a good produced by our actions much more complicated than it initially seems, maybe even impossible, right? Because what makes me happy or gives me pleasure might not be relevant to you or to a great many other people, meaning that there is no objective way to decide what is good, right? So this is a problem. So we can see that, you know, intuitively, utilitarianism seems to be quite a good way of making an ethical decision, but we also see that it has problems, right? So with preference utilitarianism, it proposes that we define a good in terms of our satisfaction, of the satisfaction of our preferences, right? So morally good actions best satisfy the preferences of the people affected in comparison to other actions. So as we've said, beauty, knowledge, friendship, education become included as the preferences that other individuals have, whatever preferences particular individuals have for them. So we can see that preference utilitarianism opens itself to some sort of criticism, and the objections sometimes include what should we do about damaging preferences? So some people might have a preference for sadism or pain, Or there might be people whose preferences are based on false beliefs, right? So people that believe in conspiracy theories and so on. And those people also might have different preferences if they knew the truth. So we run into all sorts of different problems. So in contrast to preference utilitarianism, and going back to the original Jeremy Bentham approach, Jeremy Bentham actually just adopted a purely hedonistic approach to utilitarianism, which means that he didn't consider things like food, friends, freedom, privacy, education, and so on as good in themselves. He goes back right to the beginning and says, look, what we actually really want to be doing is maximizing pleasure or happiness. And when we look at things like freedom, privacy, having friendships and relationships, or maybe having nice cars, he considers all of these instrumental goods, right? Which means that they play a causal role in creating the good itself. So they're not good in of themselves. If you think about a car, owning a nice car, the car in itself is not good. It's the fact that you own the car, that you own a nice car that you really like, that gives you pleasure or happiness. So this is an important distinction to understand in ethics, right? And it's the difference between instrumental goods and intrinsic goods, right? So according to Jeremy Bentham, pleasure and happiness are intrinsically good of themselves, right? And these are pretty much the only things that are intrinsically good, maybe apart from life itself, right? So just to sum up there, we're talking about something that is a good, which we want to maximize, right? And we can consider things that have instrumental goods, that are instrumentally good. And the difference between something that's instrumentally good and something that's intrinsically good is that you can usually trade something that's instrumentally good, right? So you can sell your car, you can buy food, you can, if you have money, money is instrumentally good, means you can exchange it. But you can't exchange your life for something, right? And so we get to Peter Singer, who actually is, I think, a preference utilitarianism. So I'm up to slide 12 in the PowerPoints if you're following along. And he's one of the most famous utilitarian thinkers on the planet today. He's still around. He's an Australian. And he believes that human preferences can be universalized. That what that means is that we can objectively and from an impartial perspective mostly agree upon what conditions we need satisfied for a good life, right? And he believes that the right to life is tied to a being or an individual's ability to hold those preferences, right? So what makes a good life, according to Peter Singer, is the preferences that you choose in your life, right? So some people want to go to university and get an education. Other people pursue different paths. Other people become adventurers. Other people want to go and live as a hermit in a hut in the bush somewhere, and so on. And it's the fact that we can make those choices, according to Peter Singer, that makes that creates a good life for us, right? So the other thing about Peter Singer is that he's written extensively on animal rights and animal ethics, and probably unsurprisingly, he's a vegan as well, which is a kind of interesting side point. So now we get to this final kind of definition, which I'll just sum up this podcast with. You're entitled, of course, to have any preference for any of the versions that we've discussed. So you might consider yourself a preference utilitarianism. You might think about some of the other versions that I've discussed so far, and there are more versions to come in the next podcast. I'll describe them and talk about them. But if we just go back to very basics and we take Jeremy Bentham's original definition of utilitarianism, I think that's the one that we should roll with mostly with this course, as a starting point at least, right? So according to Jeremy Bentham, the good that is to be maximized is happiness and lack of pain. So what is sought in utilitarianism is the greatest good for the greatest number of people, right? So what we want to do, the main goal of utilitarianism is maximizing the good and minimizing the harm for the maximum amount of people. That's really the basic definition of utilitarianism, right? So if you think about this approach, the moral value of actions is then judged by the amount of happiness, or alternatively, the amount of suffering that they are likely to cause all who can be affected by them, and compared with the amount of happiness or suffering that's likely to be caused by alternative actions. And so that's the basis of your ethical decision-making process using a utilitarian approach. Right, so if you are going to use that approach in making a decision, what you need to do is consider all of the relevant decisions or moral actions or moral judgments that you can make. What are all the different possible options? And then you assess the likely good and bad consequences of each of those actions. Then you compare the overall amount of good and bad for each action against the others. And then the final step is choose the action that is likely to produce the greatest amount of good overall for the greatest amount of people. And I think we'll stop the podcast at that point, and we'll continue on with the next one in the next podcast, which will be coming up soon.